Hello, welcome back. It's episode 58 of Campbell Conversations with your host, Colin Campbell. And today's conversation is all about empowerment and self-talk. To discuss this topic, we are joined by Lindsay Roberts, an empowerment coach, Lululemon ambassador, and business owner. We explore what empowerment really truly means, as well as how we can be more authentic and the key role that fitness plays alongside some other principles in achieving empowerment. Lindsay shares with us the importance of self-talk, and we explore three relevant examples, two from Lindsay's life and one from my own. Finally, we go in deep on the concept of protecting energy. This was a new topic for me, although I understand the principle previously. It was great to really dive into that. And Lindsay talks about how she tries to accomplish this both for herself in running her business, but also for her clients. As part of this conversation, there's a big, big focus on saying no and creating boundaries, both in our business lives and our personal lives. And I certainly think it's something a lot of us can gain from. Today's podcast, I'm delighted to tell you, is brought to you by Movement and Mindset for Medicine. Founder Evie Sharden previously appeared on episode 25 of the podcast and shared her story about managing chronic inflammation and arthritis within her body. Evie now provides a bespoke programming service and courses teaching clients and providing them with the tools to build mobility into their lifestyle. Listeners of this podcast will receive 10% off the two different options that Evie offers in either courses or one-to-one programming. And if you use the code CAMBRO10, Evie's website will be in the bio, and it is Evie Does It. That's EvieDoesIt.com. That'll be linked in the show notes below if you would like to get involved and build mobility into your lifestyle. Before we dive into this episode, I wanted to say a massive thank you, as always, to all the listeners who are continuing to show their support and helping build this wonderful community that we have at Campbell Conversations. If you're not already, please hit the button on the whatever podcast app you're listening to subscribe so you do not miss any releases that are coming every single Sunday. When I tell you we've got some good episodes coming up, I am not bluffing. I promise. Believe the hype. Let's enjoy this conversation, and I'll speak to you all very soon. Hello, welcome back to another episode of Campbell Conversations. And today's conversation, we are talking about a range of topics. To do so, we are joined by Lindsay Roberts, an empowerment coach, Lululemon ambassador, and business owner. Lindsay, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thanks so much for having me.
I'm really excited to have you on, and a big thank you to our mutual friend Fraser McDonald for the connection. An absolute gentleman and somebody that's been a big help to me during the pandemic with our training sessions in his garage dungeon, but also somebody that's introduced me to some really interesting people, and you being one of them, Lindsay. So without any further ado, tell us a little bit about your background, and does that introduction in terms of empowerment coaching, Lululemon ambassador and business owner, does it encapsulate some of the main things that you stand for?
Yeah, it definitely does. I think you've like narrowed it down, which is something I find quite difficult to do. I'm always like doing lots of different things, so find it quite hard to be really like specific about what I do. So you've totally nailed it. Thanks.
That's good. And I think whenever you look at somebody's Instagram profile and their social media and the stuff they put out there, even though it maybe doesn't say it in their bio, and yours does around empowerment coach, you can delve deeper into terms of what are they saying in their posts, what is their direction, what's their message, and then you can start to understand that. So it's quite easy to gather quite quickly that you talk about empowerment, you talk about self-talk, you talk about protecting energy, all big topics that we'll get into as we go through this. But also it's clear that you're a business owner. It's clear that you work with a brand, Lululemon, that you really care about, and you're happy to endorse and share their products. And that comes through. And I wonder if people, and this is a complete tangent, but if people maybe look at their social media and what they put out there, does it reflect who they feel that they are, I suppose, Lindsay? That's a bit of a deep question for us to start with.
Yeah, it's really interesting, social media, isn't it? Because you get this insight into people's lives that you would never have had before. And that can be incredible. Like, we learn so much from social media. And right now, we're connecting in a way that's not, we're not able to connect in person. So connecting through social media is incredible. But you also get this insight into people's habits and behaviors, like who's watching your stories and who's liking this and who's not. that you would never have known before. And I think that sometimes can cause some real, like, I know we're going to talk a bit about negative self-talk, but I think that can really bring that into the fold, like, who's paying attention to me, and or why aren't they paying attention to me, or why aren't they responding to me in a way that just, it wouldn't happen if you were face to face, because you would be responding to each other. Whereas we're so saturated on Instagram that often we are just watching things and we're like, oh, like one of my friends has had a baby, or a colleague from a long time ago, and I'm still in my head, I need to message her and say congratulations because I've seen it on Instagram.
Yeah.
But I want to message her privately. So yeah, I think it's an interesting place. I personally just put out there what I feel I would love to have seen when I was at certain points in my life. So it's incredible to me that the stuff that you've said about my business comes across. I'm not specifically planning that. I'm just putting stuff out there from my heart that I feel I really want people to see, or that I might have really needed when I was in that place in my life.
There's lots and lots within that. I'm going to focus on a couple of those. First of all, you do come across as very actualized, so I'm not surprised that much of what you post on socials is what coming from the heart, as you've said there, and that's a nice term to use. Equally, you're talking there about when we see somebody's big announcement on a new job, a new relationship, a new member of the family, all these different big headline moments. A birthday is probably the main one, actually, is if it comes to mind for me. It's nice to then obviously like it and show your support online, but go away and give the private message delivered. And I'm sure there was a study around the kind of dopamine and serotonin that people got from when they get a private message versus hundreds of likes on Instagram. And it's considerably deeper and more meaningful when you go direct. And so I think it's nice that you straight away were thinking, yeah, I've seen it on there, but I'm going to go direct and kind of make them feel a bit more special.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, that's just really important. Like exactly what you've said, when someone messages me privately, actually, it was my birthday a couple of weeks ago. And a few people messaged me privately that I've not heard from in such a long time. One of my friends sent me a card who lives on the other side of the world. And that is just so meaningful. I mean, the Facebook stuff is really meaningful too. But someone taking that extra step to deliver something to you, especially in a time like this, does feel incredible. So yeah, that makes total sense.
Partly the novelty of it, I guess, as well, because it's different from the online chatter. And I know, and actually we're way off on a tangent, but I'm enjoying it, is on my birthday this year, I was digitally free until 12 o'clock because I've found before, particularly with the social media following, that your phone can go a bit nuts on those apps in particular when it's your birthday. And
yeah,
how much of it can you actually take in when you're rushing around, and if it's coming through one or two at a time? So what mm-hmm. I did is I kind of had my morning to myself. I saw socially distanced or physically distanced from my family and a couple of my friends, but I then logged on at 12 and I sat for an hour and just replied sincerely and reviewed each one because it meant a lot more. It almost felt like that. Whereas the novelty of you receiving that package from your friend probably meant a lot more because you were more present in it, whereas you probably got 8 or 9 messages in one notification check and were like, right, okay, great, that's amazing. But that fades quickly, whereas the kind of intensity and the depth of the physical message was even deeper.
Yeah, I think that's like a really big sort of like insight and point on like what we're experiencing right now and just how important that connection with other human beings is that we're not able to experience, you know. And we've got this kind of, the word falsified is coming to my head. Like, it's not to say that Instagram and social connections are not real, because they are, they're really real, but they're just not the same. There's nothing that can replace that like personal human connection that we get in real life. So like, that's a total reflection, isn't it? Like, when you get that extra step, or you get a card, or you get something that's beyond what is now the norm for communicating, it just really shows that as much as media changes and technology, what will never change is that we need that human connection from each other, and we need to find it in any way that we can right now.
Yeah, well, what a great start there around connection. I really enjoyed that, Lindsay. But one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast was around your title, Empowerment Coach. What does the term empowerment mean to you and to your clients?
So to us, empowerment is giving people the space and the tools and the guidance and the support to be their most authentic selves and to live the life that they want to lead. I think, and I'm going to just go with this tangent that's coming into my mind here, but I've been thinking back to like my experience both when I started out as a personal trainer and when I've had coaches my whole life. I was a professional athlete before I became a personal trainer, so I've always had coaches and teachers, and I think back to like the language that was used and the way that I was coached with the things that I wanted in my life and the struggle that I faced in terms of meeting a lot of burnout and just not really being able to get to where I wanted to go because I was trying to do too much, because I felt all this pressure, like I had to train 7 times a week, I had to sleep X amount of hours, I had to eat this food and I had to drink this amount of fluid. And when I stopped being a professional athlete and I moved into coaching and I had my son, I still carried a lot of those habits, you know, and a lot of those expectations. And when people came to me, I would say things, you know, like I would think things, even if I didn't say them out loud, I would think in my head, well, if you really want that, you're going to have to train it 5 times a week and stuff like that. And I very quickly realized that that just wasn't sustainable for a lot of people. And what I also realized is that people coming to us might have been coming for, you know, I want to change my body shape or I want to have a 5-day-a-week exercise habit. But what we quickly started to explore was like, what is your why? Like, what is deeper than that? Why are you really here? Like, if you want to change your body shape, why do you want to do that? And I'm not saying this is everyone's line, but let's say, for example, that person thought they would be happier if they were a smaller body size. Yeah. And then underneath that are feelings of worthlessness, like negative self-talk, self-limiting beliefs about themselves that have been conditioned through childhood or experience or whatever. So then it's like, okay, getting to that ideal body shape, when I say ideal in air quotes, that you're seeking is potentially not possible for your lifestyle. You know, maybe you've got a kid and your job's full on and your partner is works away, or maybe you just don't have the energy to put that much into your training. So how else can we find you that joy that you're seeking in life? Because, and people who are listening might know this or they might not, that joy is rarely found in a smaller body. So how can we bring you that joy in your life? How can we find those things that you're really seeking, that why? How can we support it? And that was when my business started to transform. That was when things started to change for me, because I was really delving deep into what people wanted to do with their actual lives, not with the social media veneer, not with what the standard industry had been telling them for so long, what they wanted to do with their lives. And for me, that was where the term empowerment came from, because there is nothing more empowering than living your life the way you want to live it.
Yeah, the terms that you use around authentic self is so important, because like you say, there's maybe a preconceived narrative that I'll be happy when I'm smaller. I'll be happy when I've got that extra vein in my bicep. I'll be happy when I can squat an extra 10 kilos either side in the barbell. And these are metrics that can lead to happiness because of some of the things you do around them potentially, but they can also lead to misery because you're chasing something that's external validation. And we had a confidence coach on, Dr. Aziz, who spoke around this never-ending cycle of further down the line, I'll be happy. Further down the line, I'll be confident. If I achieve this, then I'll be happy. But we're progressive beings, and that's what's evolutionary, isn't it? To want more as we go. So I find it incredibly interesting that, particularly in the space that you are, Lindsay, there's a lot of people who have this notion that if I go to Lindsay, or initially when they went to you, if I can drop to a size 8, a size 6, whatever it is, whatever the metric is, it doesn't matter, I'll be happy then, I'll be fulfilled then. And often that wasn't the case because it might not be right for them. Equally, it might be that somebody completely transforms their life in terms of they build a 5-day-a-week training habit and it does transform their life and it makes them feel fantastic. But like you say, it's a sliding scale of, is that possible for you? And that's not to demean what your own capabilities are, because everyone has different levels of potential and capabilities and different life stresses and factors. And taking that into account and to empower them is something that's incredibly important. Is fitness the main vehicle that you see that happening through?
I think fitness is the thing that brings people to us. So it's like, it's the source that people access us through. But I wouldn't say that it's the main vehicle that leads us to empowering people. I mean, like, strength training in particular, as a female, changed my life. Like, I am a small body, you know, I'm 5'2", nearly 5'3", still growing at 34 years old. I'm not. And, you know, and I've always been small. I was bullied for a lot of my life, childhood and adulthood. So I've always been, you know, like, people have sort of misconstrued, or I can't think of the right word, have not seen me for who I am based on just looking at my size.
Yep.
And, you know, being described as a wallflower, like, lots of times when I was younger, by, like, teachers, just with not a good grasp of empowering language for young people. Yeah. So when I learned how to strength train, it gave me so much physical strength that then gave me a lot of mental strength. So fitness and exercise is life-changing. It's about finding which element of fitness and exercise is right for you, and how can you weave that into your life in a way that's sustainable. Like, somebody might want to challenge themselves and see if they can ever get a visible six pack. That might be something someone wants to do, but I think consciously as coaches, that has to be put forward with the understanding that that's potentially not sustainable for a large part of the population. You might get there, but what are you willing to stay within some of those habits which might be incredibly disordered for the rest of your life? And are you okay with the fact that it's going to change again? So I think we need to be a bit more open about that, and a bit more, like, you know, conscious about it when we're working with our clients, because otherwise it can be a bit dangerous, can't it?
The first part of what you were saying around strength training, I think the vast majority of people will be nodding along because they will have experienced that. I'm from my audience from a demographic that quite like to lift weights. They like the feeling it gives them. It makes them feel great. I completely resonate as being a kind of, I was always quite a small guy at school, and I was conscious of my physique and how I came across, and I built more presence by becoming physically more imposing and more confident in myself. And that was fantastic. The second part of what you say is probably the most challenging thing for a lot of people listening, and potentially in the past for people like myself as well, because maintaining a particular body type that you feel will be the optimal way for you to feel at your best in terms of confidence and happiness and fulfillment might not make you feel the best when it comes to actually functioning day to day. And given that I now do maintain a very lean physique year round, and I appreciate the listeners will be saying, oh, but what about you, Colin? I think there are elements of how long I've been doing it that make it easier. Whereas for somebody who maybe comes to you and wants to achieve a visible six pack for the first time, it's a very long journey to be in a position where you would even want to or be able to do that for 6 months at a time, 8 months at a time, years at a time beyond that, because there's so much that goes into it. Like you say, these habits that are perhaps disordered in some ways to achieve that very extreme result for many people, whereas those become a little bit less extreme as the time goes on because of the ease of doing it. And by that, I mean, my calorie expenditure is just naturally higher now because of all the different habits that I've got. But in order to get to the six pack the first time around that I did it back in, I don't know, 2013 or something, when I was 21, I was doing incredible amounts of cardio. I was heavily restricting food. Whereas now for me to really drop the hammer, I would still diet on a lot more food. I would just do some more steps. I've got more, one, scientific knowledge, but also I've got a much easier base to build from. I don't know if that makes sense, Lindsay.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And, like, I think, like, what you've said, you know, about people just being aware of that, you know, that you've been doing this for a really long time. And also it's like lifestyle as well, isn't it? Like, we all have such unique lifestyles and different things going on in our lives, different genetic makeup as well for how accessible certain things are going to be to certain people. And I think it always comes back for me to the why, like for someone, like what is their why for wanting to get there? And if we get right down to it and the why is just, I really just want to do it. Then I'm definitely, and I'll hold my hands up and say, I'm not the right coach for that person. You know, that's not my area of expertise. And that's not to dismiss someone in any way. It's just, I would never want to take someone on pretending I could do something that's not a field that I work in. But if we get down to the why and it's, well, actually, I just want to feel better about myself. It's like, okay, well, how can we access that in ways that support your life, you know, and what you want for your life? Which is where we always come back to. The why is, like, for me, such a powerful question that I ask myself in everything that I do, and it makes such a big difference to my decisions personally, as well as to the ones that we use for our clients.
That makes total sense, and I think that why piece is fantastic. My kind of supplementary question to that would be, we've spoken about strength training as one of the hows to that. What are some of the other hows that you would want to share with the listeners, Lindsay?
For people just sort of finding a sense of self-worth or getting to
feeling empowered through your business. What are some of the hows? First of all, strength training, I imagine, forms a big basis. Are there any other kind of key areas that you are common themes for people?
Yeah, definitely. So strength training, stress management, you know, sleep quality, just like general mental health, how you're feeling day to day. Like for the people who bleed that we work with, menstrual cycle awareness, and trying to live a life within your own menstrual cycle and not trying to combat against it all the time. Things like that, experience through, if someone has been pregnant, you know, what was that like for you? And also, like, delving in a little bit to, like, you know, what has life been like for you so far? And what kind of things have come up that have influenced your behaviours now, or that maybe influence your beliefs about yourself?
There's a huge amount there. And I think some of the first things you named were around sleep quality and stress management, which actually ultimately lead to quite often better physical outcomes, which for me is really, it's very funny, because if we manage these variables, maybe these long-term physique aspirations and drop a dress size or whatever the kind of term is that they come to you saying is more achievable. But by focusing on those other areas, you take the focus off purely just to how they look, and maybe in 6 months' time they look in the mirror and think, actually, that happened by looking at these other things first, and I'm actually happier even if I hadn't got the physical result because of what I'm doing, which I find really interesting. On stress management, are there any kind of key particular areas we can maybe go in a wee bit on, Lindsay?
For me, in terms of stress management, like, the biggest thing is boundaries. Like, this is the thing I come up against, not up against, it's the thing I uncover with every person that I work with. I think, you know, what are your boundaries like? For me, I didn't even realise that I had zero boundaries for so long. You know, like, on my journey as into this business, I realised how much of a people pleaser I was, and, you know, how desperate I was to be liked, because my self-limiting belief is that I'm not good enough, and that will continually come up. So I had this real desperation to be liked, that I would mold and shape and move myself in different ways just so that people would like me. Of course, that doesn't come to the result that you want it to. So just like realizing that as a result of that, I had zero boundaries. So for me, boundaries is a really big one when it comes to stress management.
Yeah, I really like the term boundaries as well, because it's drawing a line in the sand where I will and will not go. And I'm sure we can go into some of those around the boundaries you've got in your personal life now. I know that was one of the things we were going to cover when it came to kind of productivity and well-being hacks, but not to jump forward to that. With the pandemic, how do you think that's affected people's ability to be empowered? Do you think there's been a movement towards more of it? Do you think there's been perhaps some challenges around whether people were able to do that due to the lack of access to facilities? I'd be really interested to know where your head's at with that.
I think, like, the people who I have encountered who have felt the most empowered or have had the most positive change in this incredibly unique experience are the ones who have been able to find some form of acceptance and really listen in to what their bodies and minds need. I think what maybe initially happened in the beginning for a lot of people was this like sort of struggle and battle against, because we didn't know what was happening. It was like every 3 weeks, oh, it's just another 3 weeks, or, you know, and that went on until like September or however long it went on for. So there was this like great sense of, oh, I'll just leave it just now because everything will be back open again in 3 weeks. I mean, I thought I was closing my gym for 6 weeks. Then it was like 9 months later. So I think like when people were able to accept and realize that this is such a colossally difficult experience, and that is always hanging over us, you know, no matter whether you've woken up in a good mood or whether you had a good day or a bad day or whatever, we are forever under right now under this umbrella of the pandemic. So I think we have to be super aware of the impact that's having on our mental health, from the big things like not being able to connect with our loved ones and go places and get out of the house, to the little things you might not even consider. Like I watched someone recently not be able to go in with their dog. The dog was just getting a checkup, but the dog was so distressed and therefore the owner was so distressed. And I was thinking, you know, that could be a person living on their own and their main companion right now is their dog. And we're all connected. If you've got a dog, you're so connected to them.
Yeah.
How traumatic is that? And we're not even really, we don't even have the capacity to really think about it. It's just like, we have to just be physically distanced. And I'm not disputing that, but it's like, all these little tiny things that we're not even realizing are having that effect on our mental health. So when we're constantly trying to combat that and keep up with these maybe exercise habits or any habits that we had pre-pandemic, I think that's when it becomes disempowering. That's when it becomes a struggle. So like for me, my sort of advice or my sort of thing that I'm always sort of saying to my clients is, if you feel like you need to lie on the sofa like for a day and you have the ability to do that, then do it. You know, this is not a time to like smash the shit out of lockdown. Like this is a time to survive. And if that survival for you is that your body needs rest and your mental health needs a reset, then take that. You know, don't feel like you have to have shown this level of productivity or took all these, you know, steps to make your physical health better. You know, you just got to do what you can to survive. And that is you living your life authentically in the way that you need, is really what it comes down to. It's not tools I can give you. It's you living your life and what you need in your life.
Yeah. So using this period of pandemic to be more in touch with what you might actually need and giving yourself that permission to know when's time to push and when's time to pull back, and kind of being accepting of that. And that's not encouraging ultra productivity or ultra laziness or whatever the term people want to throw around is. It's finding where you're at on those days and empowering yourself to make decisions based on that. And I think that leads us nicely into one of the key areas that I highlighted when I was getting prepared for this conversation, and that was stealth talk. First of all, do you want to give us a little bit of a definition of where that stands? Many people will be familiar with self-talk. It's a little bit self-evident, but where does it lie for you, Lindsay? What does it mean?
So yeah, this is one of my like big sort of buzzwords that I'm questioning and coming back to all the time. And it's your inner dialogue, your narrative. The way that comes up will be different for everyone. And I'll be fully honest that I'm not a psychologist, but for me, it's, you know, the things that I say to myself when I'm going about my life. And it's so inherent and it's part of being a human that most of us don't even notice it. And I want to actually share an example with you that I noticed recently. So I have been a coach for a long time, 16 years maybe. And when we started the whole time I've been coaching, anytime I've stood up and led a class, there's an element of not liking that when I'm doing it. And when we went on Zoom, I'm like, I was hating it. was more than not liking it. I was hating it. And I was thinking to myself, like, why? What is this? Because on the other side of the coin, I love coaching and I love what it gives to people and I love sharing my joy in movement. Why is there an element that's of resistance every time? I don't want to do this. And I thought maybe it's just fear of exposure, fear of, you know, that wee performance element. And then I started to realize recently that actually, whilst I'm coaching, especially if it's a session like yoga or maybe conditioning or something where I would be not participating, but giving examples, you know, at the front of the class all the time, I am talking to myself really negatively. So when I'm doing yoga and I'm doing like an intense posture and my body is shaking and I'm physically finding it hard, my self-talk is saying, you're meant to be a coach. You were an athlete. Why are you finding this hard? You don't live this practice. You don't practice yoga often enough. These are the things that are coming up. They're going to know that you're an imposter. They're going to know that you're not good enough to be doing this. This is in my head and it has been for 16 years and I've only just noticed it. I've literally only just noticed it and realized that actually when I'm up there pretending to be this like superwoman who doesn't find things hard, I'm not showing my authentic self, not showing my true self to anyone. So what I've started to do now, and I've actually developed a new project that just launched last week, and it's all about finding the joy in movement. When I'm delivering that, I'm openly saying this is hard, and I'm openly like grunting and shouting, and you know, because it is hard. And the freedom that I've found in that is incredible. And that self-talk is now like, yeah, it's hard because it's supposed to be hard, but look at that, you just did it. Like, you know, or take a rest now, it's totally fine. Like, and I'm allowing myself to be seen authentically for the first time in a way I didn't even realize that I was holding back on. So that's an example of how we can be so unaware of it, even when we are aware of it.
That's a brilliant example, Lindsay. And like you say, you had that element of imposter syndrome, which is such a throwaway term, but it's so prevalent across people who are 16 years into a career where you are, by so many metrics, successful. And you might cringe when I say that, but that's a term that a lot of people would attach to you. However, you were having moments during those classes where you're saying, this isn't good enough, Lindsay. I'm not good enough at this. I'm not practicing what I preach. They're going to know that I'm not as good at this as I should be. However, the vast majority of the people in that class would have just been trying to benefit as much from you as possible. And I certainly firmly believe that the person that leads a particular practice or exercise or whatever it is should have knowledge and a level of skill in it to coach and deliver. And I know you, I see you're nodding and you agree, but it doesn't mean that you need to be the oracle on all matters. And if you're doing a challenging yoga pose, it's authentic. And that's such a word that we're banging back and forth each other here. But you're your authentic self by acknowledging the challenge in it. And like you say, now that you've rectified or changed how you speak to yourself about it, people in the class, although they were probably thoroughly valuing it beforehand, they're probably even more connected with you because they feel, and this is really spiritual, I suppose, for me, but they feel that you are in a place where you're even happier, even though it probably wouldn't have shown before, but you clear, there'll be an element of where your body language will never betray that you're fully in that place, but now that would be impossible to find because you truly are happy when you're up there.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like the value that then gives other people is increased, you know, tenfold, because what we want and what we talked about at the start is human connection, and what we need is realness. And an element of that success of mine that you mentioned is here because I am showing my authentic self in as many different ways as I can. And I'm so happy to be a vessel to share that stuff with people, because that's all I wanted to see when I was going through different things in my life. And I think, yeah, just people knowing that you're human also empowers them to realize that exercise doesn't need to be easy. What you're doing in life doesn't need to be easy. What I think is a barrier and what makes us give up is that we do something and we're like, oh, I'm rubbish at that. Mm. Oh, this isn't for me. This just isn't for me. Actually, the struggle is welcome. It's all welcome, because it's all part of us, you know, like the happy, the sad, the good, the bad, the ugly, the struggle, the crying, the laughing. It's all part of us. And when we show that, especially if there are people who are listening who are coaches, that's when you lead from the front. That vulnerability is power. And culturally, I think, especially in Glasgow, the west of Scotland, we're taught that that vulnerability is something that we should hide. But actually, that's real power. That's really, it's really brave to put that forward, to be able to show people your whole self and not feel ashamed of it. And if I want people to do that for their lives, I feel that that's a responsibility of mine to live that and embody it as much as I can.
Your showing of vulnerability, like you say, is a leading example for the people that you coach to be empowered to be their authentic self. And one of my favorite things that anyone said in this podcast was actually back at episode one. Had the pleasure of having Chris Williamson on, and he said that some of the strongest people he knows show their vulnerability every day. And that it was like almost converse logic, where, oh, if they show their vulnerability, they must be weak. In sharp contrast to that, they are actually incredibly strong because they're incredibly self-aware. They know about their vulnerabilities, they know about their weaknesses, they know about areas to work on, they admit them freely. And while some of those might limit them in some aspects of their life, if they really wanted to, and say, for example, like you say, one of your vulnerabilities is a particular pose that you're doing in front of the class during yoga, you can go away and work on that if you want to, but equally acknowledge that, listen, it's really hard and I'm probably not going to get better at this for a long, long time. And my ego is going to take an absolute battering because some sessions I'm going to end up distressed and upset about how it's gone. But because you're aware of that and how you've spoken to yourself about it, you give yourself that opportunity.
Yeah, definitely. That's it. Like the day that I learned, like being a sensitive soul and having been told for my whole life that, oh, you're just too sensitive, or you need to get thicker skin or whatever. The day that I learned that actually because I always identified as a strong person. So the day that I learned that my vulnerability was my strength, my sensitivity was my superpower, everything changed. Everything changed. And I therefore went forward and built a business that supports so many people in making really, really big life changes, big changes in their lives. That I'm incredibly proud of. So yeah, if you're hearing this and you're thinking, oh, I hate it when people see me cry, or I'm so weak for doing that, or I'm so, you know, why did I let that upset me? Actually, like, all of it is welcome. You know, like, your vulnerability is your strength. When you show that to other people and you open yourself up like that, it's really powerful.
That awareness of it as well and ability to channel it is important as well, because like you say, if you just became really vulnerable and it made you more vulnerable in terms of unable to do things, it's your awareness of it that makes it so strong and so capable of utilizing it. You gave me another example when we spoke offline about self-talk, and it was when you made that move from being Lindsay, the deliverer of X number of classes per week, to the business owner, the strategy overseer, the one that's driving forward a large business now with employees and staff. What was that like? And what was some of the self-talk went on during that period when you made that transition, which I know a lot of people will take a lot of lessons from?
Yeah, that was really tough. And the most obvious way I can think of is that I didn't do it for a really long time when the business really needed it. You know, the business was ready for me to step out and start bringing other people up and sharing and the, you know, what we do with other people, and I just wouldn't do it. And it wasn't some sort of control thing, because I really just wanted someone else to take control. It was the belief in me that what I'd built wasn't actually that good. And so to let people in and to start talking about systems and developing, you know, ways that other people can deliver what I do, I was like, well, I can't do that, because then everyone's going to learn that this is actually just rubbish, you know, and that I'm actually just a big old phony over here, even though I've been doing it for 16 years. So that's probably the most evident behavior that came out of that negative self-talk. I was not aware of the negative self-talk at the time. When I look back now, I realize how much I thought I was an imposter and how much I just couldn't take that step, because it was like, it was a vulnerability. It was letting myself be seen it was allowing myself to step into the role of business owner. And at first, if I said that, I'd have been really hesitant. Now I'm like, I am the business owner, I am the founder, I am the leader. And I don't mean that in a really like dictatory way, but like I couldn't have said those words before. So that was really challenging, and my head was so full of, you're such an imposter. However, when I took the big leap, the level up was incredible. Like when I took it and I owned it and I stepped into it, it was amazing. And I started to think, you know, so what? I'll just, if I fail, I'll be okay. I'll just rebuild.
Yeah.
Because failure's how we learn, right? That's thrown around a lot, but that is how we learn. So it would have been okay. Thankfully, it's not failed yet. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I take so much from that, Lindsay, as somebody who doesn't own their own business. I know, obviously, I've got the kind of side hustle, the personal brand on Insta and podcasting. But as somebody that's an employee, you still have that negative self-talk about your capabilities to perhaps be a manager, to get the promotion, to take on that new client, to speak to that existing client in a particular way that you need to. You have these negative dialogues that you tell yourself all the time. I'll always try and give a kind of salesy example. So there may be prospects on my list, companies that I'm to speak to that have never spoken to my company, or when they have, it's been a big fat no, a big hand in the face. And me accepting that dialogue within myself is, I'm not going to be the one that can change that. I'm not bringing anything new. I'm saying the same things. They're still happy with what they've got. They're never going to take this call. Well, of course, I'm never going to win then. Of course, I'm never going to make an impression. Likewise, you were never going to grow your business to the scale it is now by continuing to work in it all the time rather than on it. And I hope a lot of people can take something from that around the conversation they're having with themselves about their potential. And one of the big questions I get asked a lot is, what's your biggest fear? Colin answered that in the last solo podcast. And my biggest fear, Lindsay, is not fulfilling my potential. I have no idea what that is. I've no idea how big it is, but I really want to push towards that. And you would not have been fulfilling your potential, and that would scare me, by continuing to just take hundreds or tens of classes a week and not step back, do some strategy work on the laptop, bring people into your team, expand the number of shoulders that are bearing the weight.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting, actually, because when you said that, like, what's your biggest fear? I thought, he's going to ask me that next. What is my biggest fear? And actually think, like, my biggest fear, interestingly, is probably doing it wrong. Okay. And that's what comes up into my heart when I hear those words. However, I take a lot of risks and a lot of big steps because I'm trying to face that fear like you. And I don't really know what's going to happen, but I'm trying to face it all the time. I think it's just such a like interesting like concept of like being really aware of our fears, like what is holding us back and how can we step into that. And yeah, for me, stepping into my role that I felt called to really did help me fill my potential, and now I'm like, I feel like I'm on the cusp again. What is my next big step? You know, I have no idea what it is, and I don't mean to give me fame and fortune. I mean, like, for my soul, what is my next thing? There's something ready for me. I just can't hear it yet. And that's so spiritual. I've went right into the deep there, but that's where I am right now.
Yeah. But given you're comfortable with that and you're like, that's you showing your vulnerability again, in terms of that's the language that you're willing to use, and members of the audience will be like, brilliant, I love that. Members of the audience might not have heard that before, and there'll be people in between who maybe needed to hear that. So it's always important to be our authentic selves on these things, Lindsay. So that leads us into another term, which is maybe a little bit spiritual, but certainly one that I resonated with when Fraser flagged to me, you need to speak to Lindsay. Protecting energy. What does that mean?
Yeah, that's a big one for us as well, and for me in particular. I think like an element of that, well, what protecting your energy means is just looking after you, yourself. You know, I am a total giver. Like that's why I'm a coach. I love supporting people. However, on the flip side of that, my limiting belief, as I've mentioned already, is that I'm not good enough. So a lot of, and this is not a judgment of myself or anyone else who's in the same position as me, a lot of my behaviours of giving are in an effort to prove to myself and to the world that I am good enough. So like, I think it just always comes back to that, like there's not really ever a selfless act. So I'm always really aware that my sort of giving nature is sort of led a little bit by this like inherent belief that I'm not good enough. And so as someone who's like that, and also as someone who's very sensitive, I have to be really mindful because I can burn out really easily. You know, I could do something like this today and then go and do some other things for work and do some nice things for friends. And like, I'm always thinking about looking after other people. Yeah. Tomorrow, I wouldn't be able to be productive because I would be so burnt out. And we don't live in a world that allows us really to take those days to just hide under the duvet. So, I mean, I own a business. I will have to work tomorrow. So it's about, how can I be really mindful of my behaviours to ensure that I can be consistently doing things on the days that I need to do them, and then take those down days when I have them available to me, instead of just going hell for leather, doing it all, and then totally burning out. So that's what protecting your energy means.
Yeah, I think a lot of people resonate with that. And if we try and put it into other terms, for example, if we've got a finite amount of fuel within the tank in a car journey, we can't just go, like you say, hell for weather for one day, and then we get as far as we can, but we've had no opportunity to maybe stop at a gas station or whatever. And I know that's maybe a labored metaphor, but you could not just go at it day after day in the gym and then expect to be able to perform every day after one of those hard sessions. And for exactly. Me, it resonates a lot when we try and bring that into the business arena, the career arena, the relationship arena, every kind of arena. If you fill up your days with high demanding, taxing tasks, of course you're going to come to a stage where the next day you aren't able to produce. And that's not saying, I know you said duvet day, but that's not saying that after a hard day, every day after that needs to be a duvet day. But it's about spreading out the different challenges that we face throughout the day and throughout the week. And there'll obviously be times of our life where maybe we turn the dial up, where Monday to Friday is seriously intense and Saturday and Sunday we have to step back. Or maybe there might be times when Saturday and Sunday you still have to do some of the big tasks, but less of them, because you're hopefully more got more ability to build in some relaxing time. But I think it's a key message where we're saying that you're not this Duracell bunny that's rechargeable every single day and night, and you just spring up and get after it. And people sometimes maybe view me like that sometimes with my Instagram and my habits and my routines and my kind of energy with, how do you produce a podcast every week? And I think, well, there's a lot of time committed to that, but I prioritize my energy into that. I prioritize my fuel towards these key tasks. You won't see me at 3 a.m. in the nightclub because I haven't prioritized that. You won't see me watching the fourth episode of Netflix. I haven't seen that series because I put my energy into this. Now, I actually get energy from doing these things. So I'll come off this call quite hyped. Some of them I come off tired, it depends, but this conversation I'm quite hyped and I'm definitely mentally stimulated as well. But I think that's an interesting topic of conversation that's kind of just come into my head. Are there some tasks that you do which actually move your business forward, move you forward, but still protect your energy, Lindsay? Is that possible?
Yeah, like definitely. I think like you were saying, like, I mean, it's all going to be based on your personality type and like what you get out of things. But when I'm doing certain things with certain people or certain elements of the business, they really power me forward. And that, I think, comes down to your individual why. Like, what is your individual gate? Like, what do you want from your life? And what do you get the most out of? And for me, that used to be one-to-one coaching. But then that became something that I wasn't able to protect my energy within, because I am so open and I'm allowing people to be so open around me. I was often sort of taking on a real sort of therapist role, which I'm not really qualified for, and I'm not qualified in how to protect my energy in that, in that experience. So those things were became difficult for me, and I had to sort of really learn, where do I put my boundaries up here while still being a supportive person for these people? So when it comes to like, are the things that like I'm doing for the business that could still drive me forward and protect my energy? Yeah, anything. As long as I'm putting my boundaries in place, you know, not working on the computer for 12 hours a day, realizing that actually I'm more productive if I've got my energy protected, I've got my boundaries in, I'm saying no to things, you know, like that's a really big one. It's so hard to say no. So how do I say no authentically? How do I say no kindly? How do I say, I'd love to do this, but can we do it in 3 months when I've actually got space in my diary? And that's, it's all just about learning your capacity, but anything, you can keep driving forward as long as you've got your boundaries in place and your self-awareness there. I believe that you could just keep doing things as long as you're taking that time back, you know, like it's a wee energy output and then you take a wee bit back for yourself.
Do you know that B word keeps coming up, boundaries, doesn't it? And I think at this point, if you're enjoying this podcast, guys, please ping a message to Lindsay and I what some of the boundaries that you maybe haven't had in the past and some of the ones you might introduce off the back of this episode, because we'd really love to hear that. And when I'm thinking about boundaries, I'm thinking about things like phone use, which you and I have chatted about before. You're yes. talking about saying no as well. So what are some of the things that you maybe have to say no to? And then give an example from a client side. So maybe one of the ladies that's come to see you wanting to be more empowered, what are some of the things that you're saying? Have you ever thought about saying no to that?
I think like for me, what I need to say no to or is just work. Like I so love what I do and I'm a total workaholic, and I say that I'm not actually promoting that behavior. It's something that I'm really working on, but so I'll say yes to everything. We come back again to that self-limiting belief, because if somebody wants me to do something for me, it means that I'm good enough, right? It means that they like me, it means that the world's going to see me and realize that I'm actually not what I think of myself. So I need to become very aware of that. Is this right for me? Is this taking me towards my goal? Is this helping me with where I want to go in my life? It might be something I want to do, but is it right for me right now? So for me, it's definitely being much more honest about what I want for my job role and what I want for my work-life balance. Those are my no's that come up, sometimes turning down projects that I actually really want to do. Yep. But I know they're going to take a lot of energy expenditure and I don't have that energy in the bank to put out there. In terms of clients, the one that comes up a lot or that just pings right into my mind when you say that is this concept of, and I'm going to go back to the parent thing, that as mothers, we need to be martyrs, you know, and it's all on our shoulders. And actually maybe some women and some men will be able to relate to this who don't even have kids. It's this inherent internalized stuff that we've maybe carried from like the 50s or whatever, that it's our responsibility. It's a sole person's responsibility to look after the house. And if that house isn't clean and tidy, or we haven't done all the things that Instagram tells us we should be doing as a parent or whatever, then it reflects negatively on us. And so those are the things that we come up against with our clients, that our clients meet us with. And it's like, where can you say no to what you've taken on within your relationship or within your life? You know, where can you say, no, it's not my responsibility to always put the toys away. No, it's not my responsibility to always cook. You know, it's my responsibility to make time for me. So how can we divide that load in a way that's less of a burden on me? That's the one that comes into my head straight away. You know, how can you say no to the things that you've potentially maybe been doing for a really long time, but that don't have to be your sole responsibility?
Gender norms and expectations are a big part of that, aren't they? And like you say, stereotypes around perhaps the lady of the house, even while maybe holding down a part-time or a full-time job, there's that expectation to be to play the housewife role as well, and that kind of terminology is from the 1950s. When you and I were speaking before this, I spoke to you about that kind of division of labor within the household, and it's actually even the case when it's my brother and I living together, so two alpha males, whatever you want to call it, we very much would sometimes argue about who's done more of the housework, who's done more of the chores. And there was a research that we maybe this says more about where we are in the autism spectrum perhaps, but we definitely like statistics and information. And he was looking and he was saying, well, there's actually a study which shows that there's a huge, huge misinterpreting, kind of misunderstanding and kind of appreciation of the actual split. And it's heavily biased towards the female of the house, typically, in terms of when she has done the vast majority of the chores. The man might have emptied the dishwasher in a kind of traditional male-female marriage, and he thinks that's him kind of done, whereas the wife might have prepared the dinner, cleaned the dishes, loaded the dishwasher in the first place, put the kids to bed, all these different chores which form part of the overall picture are being done predominantly by one person, but the other person doesn't actually acknowledge it. It just happens, and there's maybe an appreciation that, yes, that's happened, but I didn't know who did it. And it's the same for my brother and I when we were looking at, oh, well, I wash the kitchen or I clean the kitchen every Saturday. And because that's almost not acknowledged, that we don't like do it turnabout or anything like that, it's almost like a forgotten thing. And we kind of came to arguments over it, and it almost took us to write down what each of us are contributing to understand that, oh, that seems fair, or you do a little bit more of that because you've got more time on a Sunday, and there's an agreement there. So I really like that setting of boundaries and using kind of maybe statistics to some extent to help with that.
Yeah, I think, like, I've been thinking about that actually a lot since we talked about it, and I've shared it with quite a lot of people. It's just such a good task, like the writing down. And what we talked about last time offline was, it's not about, and this was a big revelation for me and my husband a few years ago as well, it's not about making it a balanced list, like he does 10 things, I do 10 things. It's about understanding what the other person's got on their plate, or what the other people in your life have got on their plate. And like you say, you can only really understand your own perspective unless someone else's perspective is put in front of you. So doing that for each other is a task actually I've given to a few people since, because it's just such a big change. And it comes up for my husband and I a lot, because we have a non-stereotypical set up in our household. Yeah. A lot of the things you mentioned that maybe would be on the expectation of the person who, of the female, are my husband's roles in our household. And but he still feels this internalized stuff about how he should be the main earner, even though we've made a decision that my business will be what gives us what we want in life. But that's still coming up for him subconsciously, and it still affects him. And there's still this expectation that I have internalized that I should look after the house, even though I'm often working 12-hour days, I'm often putting a big project out and spending a lot of time away from the house doing it, and not, I don't have the capacity to do everything else. And we've decided that that's going to be his role, yet this still comes up for us, this total internalized stuff. So, and then we have the fight, you know, oh, he's saying to me, but I do all this, I do all this cooking and all this stuff, and you're still saying to me that I'm not doing enough. And then he's not realizing how much I'm actually doing for work. So when we like sat down and we're like, this is what's on my plate and this is what's on mine, and how can we support each other through that? That was a really big thing for us. And I think also maybe the realization, and I always have this quote in my head, like, the dishes can wait, you know, that like life is not about having a clean house, like it's about living your life. And if your mental health would be better supported by going for a bath and having an early night than it would be by cleaning your floor and putting all the stuff away before bed, then do the bath in the early night. You know, that stuff can wait. For some people, the reset of the house is what will support their mental health. So it's really just trying to let go of those societal pressures, isn't it? And say no to them. Like, no, I'm not doing what society thinks I need to do to be a worthy person. I'm just going to look after myself.
The two key themes that struck me there were both awareness of and then appreciation of what you're doing and what the other person's doing. So I absolutely love that. Before we wrap up, I'd love to delve into boundaries around phone use, because I think there's nobody listening to this on their phone device that won't be able to resonate with this. So as a busy business owner, you've got some good habits, you've got some bad habits around your phone use. Share a little bit of that with us, please.
Full disclosure, at this point in time, I'm really addicted to my phone. I'm really addicted. I'm looking at it, picking it up, I'm looking at it, I'm putting it down. Within a few minutes, I've picked it up again. I'm looking at it, I'm putting it down. And that is my personality type. And also these apps and stuff are designed, you know, to make us go back to them all the time. So I have to be super strict with myself. I've got two phones, which I'm not suggesting, that's a privileged place to be in. Not everyone is able to have two phones. So I'm not saying you need to have two phones, but that's a choice I've made, a sacrifice I've made elsewhere to be able to have two.
Yeah.
My personal phone has nothing on it. It doesn't even have WhatsApp. It's really just there in case like the nursery need me or whoever's looking after my child, or I want to talk to the very few friends who have that number.
Yep.
My work phone has everything on it. I use the Screen Time app, I think it's called. I've got an iPhone, so I use the app, and it closes everything down at a certain time. That's really difficult when you don't work a 9-to-5. Yes. So I've had to put all these workarounds in. You know, some days it closes at this time, other days it closes at other times. And sometimes I need to go back into it. So again, it's awareness and acceptance, isn't it? It's like awareness of my behaviours, putting things in to support me from going into that obsessive place that doesn't support my mental health or my productivity. And then there's acceptance that sometimes I might have to be flexible with those boundaries depending on what's going on for work. But yeah, as much as I can, it goes off when work is typically finished. It doesn't go on first thing in the morning. If I go out for a walk and I'm doing like listening to a podcast or whatever, or if I'm going to phone a friend, I'll take my personal phone so there's no notifications. Those are kind of the things that I put in place whilst acknowledging that it's hard. And especially when we need connection right now, it's hard. Just becoming aware of your behaviours around your phone. Like if I've been on my phone too much, I get the rage and I start moaning at my husband and being moody with my son. And that's when I'm like, right, this needs to stop.
Yeah.
I'm in a position where I've got employees so I can delegate stuff. I'm still learning how to be better at that as well. So yeah, it's just trying to break the cycle, isn't it? I'm acknowledging that that's hard and being honest that I'm in that place right now where I'm struggling with those boundaries.
Yeah, it's about having those boundaries and then enforcing them as much as humanly possible when it fits its purpose. And
yeah.
I like the whole going out for a walk, personal phone, and the big thing you said was no notifications. I honestly would go insane if I had Instagram notifications on. I'd never be off the app. I use it enough. And the big thing that I did, and you'll have this as well, with given your following, is I go on my laptop to deal with DMs quite a lot of the time. I go on my laptop to deal with WhatsApp notifications as well, WhatsApp web, because it's a lot less exciting, because you're not going to end up on stories. You're not going to end up voice noting in the group chat with an update or anything like that. You're not going to end up watching some of the GIFs or the memes in the group chat on WhatsApp because you're on your laptop. It's a very different experience, and a lot of the kind of addictive kind of gambling encouraged elements that they learned to do for the apps to keep you on there are not present on the desktop version. So there's a lot of benefit within that for me, Lindsay. But given you're so busy, I think having the two phones is a worthwhile sacrifice in terms of maybe 30, 40 pounds, whatever you had to put away or save somewhere else a month, putting into that to have that. And I'm fortunate in the role that I have. I have a work phone and a personal phone. So during work hours, 9 to 12, especially sometimes in the afternoon, I let my boundaries slip, but 9 to 12 on my kind of core focused deep work for my role in business development is very much personal phone out the room, work phone there. It's got nothing on it. All you do is you're phoning people on it, or you're texting into the work group chat for whatever we're up to. So I really, really like those boundaries that you've got in place there. And I'm glad that you're aware that some of them aren't being adhered to at the moment. But that's the first way for you to overcome it, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And it's like anything we've talked about, you know, it's about finding what you could do best to support yourself in a sustainable way, and accepting and not judging yourself, and being okay with, like, life happens, you know. Sometimes all the time I'm going to be a human being, and that's part of being a human, isn't it? Like going over your boundaries or messing up a little bit here or there. I guess we come back to that negative self-talk and that awareness of self, by not adding shame and guilt onto that, and just being like, you know, this happened, it's happened, I've accepted it. What was my lesson? And how do I move forward?
You have entire days off the phone sometimes as well, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I have them, and I find them difficult because I go like this all the time with my hands to pick up my phone, and then I'm like, what am I doing? Like, this is insane. I have to be okay with missing things. You know, I have to fully accept that I'm going to miss things. I've been very, very conscious not to apologise. So if you talk to me and I've not spoke to you in 4 days, I try my hardest not to say, sorry, I've been off my phone. I try and just say, I've been off my phone for a few days. Or I just, if I don't need to make the excuse, I try my best not to make the excuse.
I've got a phrase for you, Lindsay. You can use thanks for your patience.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. I like that. Yeah.
But effectively, that time off your phone, like you say, you get FOMO. You notice that your hand reaches for things. I know that, and this is a hack I tried for my morning walk. I actually have my data off, but that's not always stopped me from going in my pocket, turn my data on, quickly check and turn it back off. And you're like, oh, what are you doing? But putting your phone in a different pocket flummoxes you, because your reflex is, it's always in my hoodie pocket. My hand will go down, I'll go into my hoodie. And if it's not there, I'm like, oh, I don't need it. But if it's there, it's coming out of my pocket and I'm doing what I always do. My thumb goes in the same places. If you move the app on your phone as well, you'll find you go to where the app normally is, subconsciously on autopilot, and you're there before you know it, and you're clicking, you're like, where's Instagram? Where's WhatsApp? It's normally there. So it's a funny old topic, and one that I'm working on finding a guest that can talk a little bit around dopamine detoxing, which will be an interesting one. I think we've covered a huge amount today. We've defined empowerment and looked at a way that we can actually action it for people, especially through your own coaching and your journey. We've talked about self-talk, given two phenomenal examples. We've dealt with the kind of key headline of protecting energy, which a lot of people will hopefully resonate with when it comes to utilizing their energy and fueling themselves in the right areas that matter to them, as well as some productivity hacks and some well-being boundaries that we can put in place. Now, all of that's encapsulated within Strong Like a Mother, affectionately known as SLAM. Where's the best place for people to go and find out a little bit more about that, Lindsay?
Instagram is the best place to find us. We've got a website as well, and we do use Facebook. Instagram's probably the best place to come and get us.
I'll link that in the show notes below. And is there anywhere else you want to direct people, Lindsay?
No, just come and speak to us, come and connect with us, and like you said, you know, I'd love to hear about people's boundaries or anything that's come up for them that's totally resonated, and if they want to chat about it, I'm here for it.
Absolutely. The feedback element of doing these longer form conversations is what keeps us going. It's what helps me get guests like Lindsay on. So please do take the time to take a screenshot, pop it in your Instagram story, tag Lindsay, tag myself, tag Strong Like a Mother, drop me a message, let me know what you think, share it with a friend that needs to hear this, and I'll be back to speak to you all again very, very soon.